museum.org. And we are looking at 71 degrees outside in our Spokane studios under clear skies. We will have unsettled weather for the rest of the week, a bit of precipitation here and there. Right now it's concentrated in northeastern Washington. And also the temperatures are going to be on the moderate side, getting down closer to seasonal norms. We've kind of forgotten what those are all about, haven't we? But we will be soon able to say, this is a normal day out there. Well, a normal day in here when we have fine guests, and that is certainly the case today as we begin Symphony Week here at stations of SPR Classical. We have coming up on this weekend the first of the Masterworks concerts of the Spokane Symphony Orchestra. We will be talking about that program in some detail on Friday. But today, I have the pleasure of the company of music director James Lowe here in the studio. Joining him is education and community engagement director Jason Moody, and someone who is brand new to us and very temporary to us, unfortunately. That would be Kalina Bovell, who is, for this week at least, the music director fellow with the orchestra. So, good morning, one and all.
Morning, Jim. Good morning.
And Kalina, with some contribution from James on this also, I'd like to delve a little bit into the music director fellow position that you are in right now. But let's meet you first. You were born in Panama, yes?
No. So I was born in the States.
Okay.
Yeah, my entire family was born in Panama.
Okay, very good. Now we got that straight. We can move ahead here. And you told me that your instrument is violin, but that is something that probably was a bigger part of your life earlier.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, I started playing violin when I was 11. I was 7 years self-taught, so I didn't have my first private lesson until I was 18. But I pretty much tried to balance violin and being a conductor, and eventually I just kind of merged the two. But no, once I started becoming a bit more busier with conducting, I honestly haven't played since 2020. But I still have my instrument. He sits in my office.
One of these days, you can become reacquainted. Let's explore the conducting part, because at what point did the conducting bug bite you?
It accidentally bit me when I was a sophomore in college, actually. So the way I say it is my entire musical life was by accident. So accidentally started singing when I was 9, accidentally started playing violin at 11, and then accidentally started conducting because I was a music education major in college, and we all had to take a year of instrumental conducting. And so it was 4 weeks of how do I move my hands, how do I study a score. And then once I stepped on the box and kind of gave that magic downbeat, I was hooked.
All right. Well, that's very good. So you started when you were in school still conducting like string ensembles or wind ensembles or combinations?
Lovely combination. I mean, the first group I ever conducted was a mix of music educators. I mean, we were either singing or playing for each other. But then once I started taking conducting lessons, I was working with the school orchestra, and then I was trying to do workshop and master classes being able to work with larger size ensembles, and it just kind of started from there.
All right. And what was your first professional, if you can recall, your first professional engagement conducting?
Oh, that's a good question. It was actually 2016. So I was a conducting fellow with the Chicago Sinfonietta, which is Mayan Chen's group. And it was during the Martin Luther King concerts. Actually conducted one of the Dvorak Slavonic dances.
That's a fine ensemble. We have some of their recordings.
Oh, okay.
And I enjoy playing those. I enjoy sharing them. And you have just not looked back, because if that was back in 2016, a lot has happened.
Oh, tons has happened.
If you're curious and you want a really good read, you can go to KalinaBovell.com and just your bio is just full of wonder, of these places you've been and things you've been able to do and accomplishments. Just a couple of them. You won the 2024 Sphinx Medal of Excellence, which I think is something that you should be quite justifiably proud of.
Oh, definitely, yes.
And you were also the 2022-24 awardee of the Taki Alsop Conducting Fellowship. And you also conducted a reconstruction of Scott Joplin's one and only opera, Tremonitia, in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
What was that experience like?
Oh, that was amazing. I mean, one, I like to joke that I'm now a Jeopardy question because I was the first black woman to conduct an opera in Canada. But taking Scott Joplin's work and bringing it into, you know, 2023, this current time period, it was something that was very special. It was a cast that was all people of color. And we also had someone who was an authentic kora player, as well as someone who was specialized in West African drumming. So there was an extreme amount of authenticity that we all put into that production, and it was really special.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, now here you are in Spokane for this week, at least, as a music director fellow. And James, I'll toss it to you for a second. Explain what this program is.
Well, it struck me that in, during my kind of education and coming up as a conductor, there's a great deal, quite rightly, of emphasis put on how to conduct, how you study a score, how the instruments work, orchestration, harmony, counterpoint, languages, and not then least about how to rehearse an orchestra and what you do with your hands. There's a huge amount. And then you kind of get spat out into the real world and you're given a music directorship. And a music director's job, the conducting part is just the tip of the iceberg.
It's part of it, yes.
So you're involved with, you have to understand budgets, you have to understand fundraising, donor engagement, programming, education, community work. There's a huge myriad of stuff that nobody ever teaches you. So I figured what would be lovely is if we had this opportunity to set up a program, and it's like an ad hoc program. We've done it every year for the last 3 years. We just invite a conductor we like to come spend a busy week shadowing me and coming to all the meetings I have and the radio and everything we do to get a bit of an idea of what a music director job is actually like in the modern world. So I think for me this is really important. It's part of our kind of ongoing idea that as a symphony, as musicians, it's our job to give something back. We have to help a little bit people come through. And Kalina and I met, I think it was Bulgaria. Did we meet in Bulgaria?
Yes, it was at Rusa.
In Rusa, Bulgaria, five, 6 years ago, something like that.
Oh, you're very kind. It was like over a decade.
Was it over a decade? Well, I'm being kind to myself. So, yeah, Kalina was a participant on a conducting workshop that I have been involved with now and again in Bulgaria with my lovely colleague, Johanna Schlafly, who came over for our conducting workshop last year, and then was back for our conducting work, that same workshop just last year. And so I was talking to her about, you know, we have this music director fellowship. And she said, well, how do I apply? I said, well, you just did. Congratulations. So the application process is quite easy. So that's the general idea of it. And I think, it's very important for me that we have the ability to help out a little bit. And I mean, clearly needs no help in conducting your career, but just to be around this week and to hang out, it's nice for me to have a kind of partner in crime.
Someone to share the wonders and the woes of what's going on at the present moment.
Absolutely, of which there are many.
Yes, of course. Well, Kalina, give a couple of examples of perhaps things that you've encountered this week that are part of a music director's responsibilities that kind of surprised you?
You know, I don't know if it's surprise. I mean, the biggest thing for me is seeing the culture within the office. It's very lighthearted. It's very fun. And I know that within most organizations, it's very serious. It's, you know, people are very siloed. So already it's setting, creating the environment is one thing I've already learned, just kind of shadowing James for the past day. But then also just how beautiful the relationship is with the Spokane Symphony Association and how there's such a pride within that organization for what they do to support the symphony, which not a lot of organizations have. And so just to see that piece of it, it was kind of like, oh, okay, how do we have that for every organization in the States? And then also just the way that they speak about education. I mean, I'm an educator, and so education is very important to me. And I feel that education should be at the fabric of every organization. And so to see how dedicated they are to this and how dedicated James is about giving back, because most conductors of just this generation don't want to mentor and don't want to support. I mean, many want to covet and gatekeep, you know, the podium. Just to see that he's very open and just really wants to share. I mean, I think that's beautiful because that's something that I also want to do when I eventually get my own orchestra.
Right, because among other things, your job as, you know, potentially a music director is to make sure that you are an inviting presence mm-hmm. for the community that you serve, because mm-hmm. that's the way it works. Well, it's time to shift over to Jason Moody, who, as I said in the introduction, is the Education and Community Engagement Director for the orchestra. So, Jason, tell us a little bit about the scope of the responsibility of what you do.
Yeah, so, you know, James, oftentimes we say, you know, we're working with people from 0 to 100+, and I think there's a breadth and a depth of what we do. And even just hearing Kalina talk, they're thinking about, you know, we have some programs that are really hyper local, and we have like our Lullaby Project, and we pick 5 families from, for instance, the YWCA and the Salish School, and create lullabies that are then performed with them. So that's kind of a very small project, very much based here in the region. We also have something on the other side, like our International Conductors Workshop, where Kalina was a participant last year, where we have people from all over the world coming. And so that's kind of, we have in that direction, and then age-wise, same sort of thing, where we have a lot. This last year, I got to start working on doing a lot of preschool events, which was really one of my favorite things. So worked in ECAP preschools and did various community centers, and I would usually go with a colleague or two, and we would just have fun, just play music, be silly, walk around the room playing a Brahms Hungarian Rhapsody with different tempos, and having the kids play along with us and have percussion instruments. And I really loved that sort of interaction and see that spark when we also would bring some instruments for them to try, just to have that idea of what it feels like to hold the instrument and all of a sudden make a sound on a violin. Even if it's just a squeak, there's this great spark of joy mm-hmm. On that first time when you do that. So, and then on the other side of that, I guess we have our dementia project, and that's been a really exciting thing to continue to develop and work on. That's largely, we kind of have a program that we've designed an arc of music and a specific kind of entry point where the music that we tend to start with is kind of just a general pleasant piece, and we kind of slowly ramp it up, invite the residents to do some more motions, oftentimes like walking in place. And then once we kind of ramp the energy up at the top, we bring out someone from the chorale joins us, and we sing tunes from the 50s and 60s. And it's this amazing thing to walk into a room that's almost completely silent. And by midway through this program, virtually all the residents are moving to a certain extent. Many of them are singing all the lyrics to the songs. And then at the end, we invite everyone to, again, join with percussion instruments, and we'll play some tunes, and then we kind of bring the energy back down. And I think that's also been a really exciting and meaningful program to be a part of.
Oh, absolutely, because these are people who it's perhaps their one chance to get out of themselves right. and to experience life as they used to experience it, which is really, really key.
The music therapist called it a normalizing event, and mm-hmm. I like that idea that it's not, you know, we're not going to change the outcome, but it's this moment of time that people can have these connections to themselves and to memories that they don't have in everyday life at this point.
Right. James, you were going to say something.
I was just going to say, what I find fascinating now is that the modern technology, particularly brain scans and research, is now showing that music doesn't just have a psychological, but it has a physiological effect on people. And I think this is very funny because, you know, Pythagoras and Aristotle were talking about this 2,500 years ago. And now the scientific community are kind of catching up with what musicians have known for 2,500 years, mm-hmm. which is that music actually does change us. And so I think what's fascinating for me now is what Jason and I are now working on is taking some of the latest cutting-edge research and turning it into practical projects where we can actually go out and use some of this scientifically studied methodology to go out and actually genuinely have some medical and physiological outcomes. I think that's a very exciting new area mm-hmm. for music.
Wow.
And it's, I think, to piggyback off of that, it's this interesting thing where as musicians, we do know that this is so powerful, and all the research and data points to the fact, physiological and mental health, all these different things. So even when we're just at the Fox doing a Masterworks, that is something that is also, you know, impacting people's, we know that they can sync heart rates. We know that there's all sorts of amazing benefits just to sitting in the hall. But then with these projects, some of the Music Mind ones, it's more that we're specifically designing programs to look at, you know, whether it might be mental health or it might be dementia, or we're even working on a digital detox program where you leave your cell phone at the door and you start with some breathing exercises that are synced to a Bach chorale and kind of go through a therapeutic arc and then end with some time for journaling and community. And so I think it's a really exciting way to kind of pair what current research is saying and then what we know the power of music to be.
Is information about the various projects that you have underway available from the Symphony website?
We are working on it.
Work in progress.
So yes, okay. Hopefully that will be soon. There's a couple, several of these, like our dementia project, we have pretty well established. Our digital detox and music and mindfulness are 85% there. And so we're doing some refinements on those, and then we'll definitely have information on the website.
All right. And as you go along, are there projects that you have thought about that occurred to you in the middle of a night somewhere that these are paths that you would like to take one of these days as the opportunity presents itself?
Unfortunately, that's like every night. So I have too many of those rolling around in my brain. Some of the upcoming ones that were thinking about. There's a project in Spokane called the Hidden Oceans Project, and it's a collaboration with artists and some lead scientists looking at, this sounds really random, but this is the kind of thing that I think is really fun to explore, of deep sea and cold water coral reefs, which people don't really know about. And the NOAA has all this great footage of that. And so working with the researcher, working with some artists to make an event, they've involving both students, music to collaborate, hopefully some compositions that would go along with it. So then I was at someone's birthday party and they came up to me. And that's one thing I really love about this job is I'm happy to explore kind of any and all ideas and see where we can connect and use what we love to do, obviously, both in the Fox, but then throughout the region.
Mm-hmm. Kalina, have you done education and outreach things? Because mainly you have had residencies as a conductor. You do a lot of guest conducting. And mm-hmm. So you're on the road a lot. But
I am, yes.
Are there places that you've been able to be long enough so you could partake of some of these projects?
Not necessarily, but in terms of educational outreach, I was fortunate to guest conduct the Louisville Orchestra, and they do a Making Music education concert series. So it's over 3 days. Typically, 1,000 to 2,000 kids get bused in per concert. So the concerts usually serve 6,000 to 8,000 students. And so that's a way that I've been able to do outreach. Teddy Abrams, who is their music director, also has a conducting school. So I was actually able to work with their fourth and fifth grade students just how to conduct Star Wars. And what is conducting? So that was a ton of fun for me. So those are the bits and pieces that I've been able to do mm-hmm. When it comes to outreach.
Oh, that does sound like a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Implant the conducting bug in
exactly.
The next generation.
Get them young.
Very good. James, back to you. I think it's probably time to consider the season as a magnificent whole of Masterworks programs. We'll be talking in a couple of days about Mahler, so we can let him rest. For right now,
We'll get on tomorrow.
You'll very definitely come back to him. But take us through a few highlights. I know there's some pieces that are new to the orchestra, and there's some that are repeats that have been done before, like in the second Masterworks program in October on the 4th and 5th, the Ratavara Cantus Arcticus.
Yeah.
I remember I was rather new to doing Concert of the Week, and this was back in the Opera House days when there was one performance of each of those programs. And Morihiko Nakahara was up in the little sound booth cueing the birds mm-hmm. on this one. It's a wonderful piece.
It's a great piece. It's a concerto for birds and orchestra. So Rautavaara was commissioned by the University of Oulu, and Oulu is a town in Finland that is just below the Arctic Circle. I've actually worked there. It was very cold and exceedingly dark. So obviously, if you're above the Arctic Circle, you have the winter darkness. You know, it doesn't get light, but you get one long day for the summer. Mm-hmm. So he was invited to write a concerto as a kind of graduation for the graduation ceremony of that university, and decided that rather writing it for an instrument, he went and recorded sounds of birds in the Arctic tundra. So it's a very beautiful, quite eerie mm-hmm. piece. I think it's kind of analogous to when we did a couple of years ago the Hovhaness and God Created Great Whales, because it's integrating actual sounds of nature into a piece of music. So it's that's a great piece. And that whole concert is exploring the idea of how music can paint a landscape. So we have Debussy's Prelude à l'après-midi, which is this beautiful kind of hot Mediterranean heat haze of a piece. And then we also have a piece from Scotland by Hamish McCun called The Land of the Mountain and the Flood. And we end that, and the second half is all given over to Grieg's music to Peer Gynt.
Mm-hmm. Right. Magnificent stuff. It's a journey indeed. And then you're taking a week off in November, and Darko Buttigieg, who filled in for you at the last moment last season.
That's right. So, yeah, so last season I had a concert, probably one of the ones I was most looking forward to. So Mendelssohn's Scottish Symphony, which is a piece I adore, along with a piece by Eileen Sweeney, who's a young Scottish composer who I know, and Chris Rouse Flute Concerto with Julia Pike, our principal flute player. And I went down with a dose of COVID the day before the first rehearsal, and it was very mild, but still you don't want to be spreading these things around. So I immediately got on the phone, and Darko flew in from New York overnight and went straight into a rehearsal of his very complicated program and did a great job. And I've known Darko for years. In fact, rather like the way I met Kalina, he and I first met in the Czech Republic some very long time ago. Back in the days, yes, before the zeros. And we were both participants on a conducting workshop together. And he and I became really good friends from then and have stayed in touch. So it's very nice that he could come and save my bacon that week. And so I invited him back to perform Prokofiev 5, which is really, I think, his calling card. I think he's even done a whole edition of the work himself. It's a piece that he really knows, like, every note intimately. So I think that's going to be a spectacular concert.
Neat. And then as we get into 2026, we have some music for trombones on the first program of the year, the Symphonic Dances program.
That's right. So that's, again, featuring one of our own soloists. That's John Church, who's our principal trombonist. He's playing the Paul Creston Fantasy. And that was the center. So usually when I'm putting together a program, there's one piece that is the starting point. And that was the starting point because I wanted John to be featured soloist. I think it's important as well that we feature our musicians of the orchestra as soloists so that people in Spokane know exactly what incredible musicians we have here, you know, just hanging, you know, walking around Walmart of the day. So, you know, it's important for me that people know that. So we've got three musicians this year, Mateusz, John, and Nick Carper, principal viola, all featured soloists at some point.
And I'm really happy that you're doing the Creston piece because he's a composer who just doesn't really get his due.
Right, yeah, there's a whole bunch of composers from that era, I would say, who really got played quite a lot thanks to Leonard Bernstein, particularly in a certain time, and then have kind of fallen out of favor, I think, as we went through the throes of high modernism and tuneful music got kind of pushed aside for a while. Thankfully, it's back where it should be. And so, yeah, so we have this very dancey piece, and that made me think of symphonic dances. Mm-hmm. So we actually have two symphonic dances, one from Bernstein from West Side Story, which we open with, and then Rachmaninoff's Symphonic Dances, which is an epic work, which kind of is Rachmaninoff looking back at his experience and his life. And it's a profoundly beautiful and dramatic piece.
We'll have Meg Stolman, who directs the Spokane Symphony Chorale, in with you in a couple of days. And we'll be talking about the pieces that the chorale will be singing, because there's the biggie, which is coming up in just a bit on the list here. But also there's some smaller pieces that will be on this fifth Masterworks program called Stolen Melodies that...
So this idea is that the idea behind this concert is it's all music that is based upon a tune that another composer wrote. So we have the Vaughan Williams Tallis Fantasia, which is a beautiful piece based on the Elizabethan composer, English composer Thomas Tallis. We have a piece of Hindemith, which is for viola and orchestra, which is based on a kind of Bach chorale. We have some Bach from some arrangements of Bach by Walton to start the program. And then the second half is Britain's Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra, obviously, which is based on a tune by the Henry Purcell, mm-hmm. English composer. But we are doing it in with a slightly different version. We are having a new narration written for us by Spokane's own Jess Walter.
So it's going to be a thing apart.
It will be a thing apart. So I think it's going to be, working title is The Inland Northwester's Guide to the Orchestra. So knowing it. Jess, it will be irreverent and touching and quite brilliant. So I'm very much looking forward to that.
All right. We're going to have to get a bit of speed on here through the rest of the season. But again, these are all programs we'll have time to consider a bit later on. Clara Schumann comes into the scene with the program on the 28th of February, which will be conducted by Johannes Schäfli, who was here last
he's
summer.
Coming back. Yes, exactly. So Johannes is back. So that program, Clara Schumann, Brahms, and Robert Schumann. Clara Schumann wrote this piece when she was 19. It's a fantastic, fantastic concerto, and it shows such incredible promise as a composer. But unfortunately, Robert got sick and died eventually, and then she had to go out as a piano soloist to feed the family, and so she gave up composing. So I think Clara Schumann for me represents one of those composers who, but for circumstance, I think would have been in the same bracket as Brahms, but we never got past her 19-year-old self.
Mm-hmm. Moving on to March, the program is called Primavera, is Mateusz Wolski's chance to stand up in front of the orchestra for a change, and this time around it's the Sinfonia Española.
Exactly, a very fun, bright piece. I figured by March, Spokaneites will need a bit of sunshine in their lives, and this
most
is
likely.
I think spring by then may not have entirely landed, but at least it'll be kind of in the air. So that's a very bright program with Mendelssohn Italian Symphony as the second half piece, and his sister Fanny Mendelssohn's overture to open. So there's a thread of female composers from the late 19th, early 20th century, or threaded through the season here.
Very good. And the next program in April is going to be something we'll talk about extensively on Thursday. It's the Verdi Requiem.
A light little piece.
It reminds me of the story of in music there are three levels of dynamic: forte, fortissimo, and Verdi Requiem.
That's about right. Yeah.
It's epic stuff. So just for a couple of minutes to finish up then with the last program, an American music, well, To America is the title. It's not all American music. But at the centerpiece is one of my favorites, which is the Rachmaninoff Rhapsody and the theme of Paganini.
Yeah, mine too. One of the greatest tunes in the world. Mm-hmm. I think it's the 18th variation. Which is essentially, so it's based on a tune of Paganini, and amazingly, the most beautiful bit is where Rachmaninoff turns the tune upside down, and then it turns out that it's one of those tunes that sounds even better upside down than it does the right way around. But a beautiful, beautiful work played by Evren Özel, who I first heard with Spokane Quartet.
Right. He was here a couple of years ago with them, and
he was hugely impressive, young pianist. And then, so the whole concert is composers who found their home in America. So we have a new commission from Sidney Guillaume, who's a wonderful composer. We've commissioned from him before and performed a couple of his other works. So he's writing us a new piece. About what? I do not know, because he's currently writing it. The ink is still wet. And then we end with Bartok Concerto for Orchestra, which was written in New York City and was Bartok's kind of crowning glory of a work. I think probably his most approachable but fun, sardonic, epic, just a great, great piece. And it really is a concerto. It's a workout for everybody on stage. So I also want to end the season showing off this magnificent orchestra to the people of Spokane.
All right. And it is all beginning this weekend with two performances on Saturday at 7:30 and Sunday at 3. And, of course, there will be a little chance to engage with the conductor before, an hour before, as James gives his what we could call a pregame show.
And that's right, yeah. They'll give you the pregame stats.
Very good.
Yeah.
So thank you for everything that you do for the community at large, and specifically with the orchestra. It's we are uniquely blessed here in the Inland Northwest for lots of reasons, and certainly you and the symphony are one of them. And Jason, thank you for being here also and telling us a little bit about the outreach of the symphony, which is, again, a magnificent thing. And Kalina, it's been so nice to have you here, however briefly. Where are you off to next?
After this, I'm going back home to Philadelphia.
Oh, good for you.
Which so I actually just moved to Philadelphia about 6 weeks ago. But technically, I've really only been there for two. So I am looking forward to getting to know my home.
That sounds like a true plan.
Yes.
Good for you. Well, thank you one and all. And this has been From the Studio. We will be back on Thursday at 10 o'clock with James Lowe again, and also Meg Stolman, who conducts the Spokane Symphony Chorale. I do hope that you can join us then.